What's up, guys? You're now listening to Devo with Uncle Theo. Today is day 134, and we're going to cover 1 Chronicles chapters 8 through 10. The chronicler has been chronicling all of Israel's history, and we've been going through the 12 tribes yesterday. We stopped off with Naphtali, Manasseh, and Asher, and today we're going to pick up with Benjamin. And the reason we're going to start with Benjamin here is because Saul flows from the tribe of Benjamin. So let's get to him in our reading. It says here in verse 1, and Benjamin became the father of Bela, his firstborn, Ashbel, the second, Hara, the third, Noah, the fourth, and Rapha, the fifth. Verse 3, Bela has sons, and we follow that lineage all the way down to verse 33, where we get to King Saul. It says, Ner became the father of Kish, and Kish became the father of Saul, and Saul became the father of Jonathan. And so now we're getting into some familiar territory with some familiar names. We all remember Saul was appointed king because the people wanted a king like the other nations. And God used Saul to teach the people as a foil to David because he was going to raise up his true king. We also see the name Jonathan here, who is Saul's firstborn, and he's also known as David's best friend, and that lineage flows on throughout the rest of chapter 8. Then we enter chapter 9. It says, so all Israel was enrolled by genealogies, and behold, they are written in the book of the kings of Israel, and Judah was carried away into exile to Babylon for their unfaithfulness. So remember, I'm going to throw these dates around a lot because I really want you to memorize them. These are some of the most important dates in the Bible. Assyrian captivity was in 722 BC, but when we talk about the Babylonian captivity, that's the southern captivity, and it happened in three ways, remember, but the official date is 586 BC, and that's what they're referring to here. But it's interesting, in verse 1 it says, so all Israel was enrolled by genealogies, and behold, are written in the book of kings. And it's interesting, a lot of commentators note that you see the word all of Israel stated here, which includes the 10 tribes of the north who were taken much earlier in 722. And it's showing here that even though those 10 tribes were taken later, they must have eventually migrated down back to the south, which resulted in the southern kingdom now having people from all 12 tribes. Hence the word all Israel being stated here, meaning that all Israel is truly represented. As we continue in verse 2, it says, now the first who live in their possessions in their cities were Israel, the priests, the Levites, and the temple servants. And so that's what we're going to break down here. In verses 3 through 9, you're going to see all of the people who were returning. You're going to see the returning Israelites, and then those people will be named. Then you'll see the returning priests in verses 10 through 13. Verse 10, it says, from the priests. And then lastly, you'll see the Levites in verses 14 through 34. And as this chapter ends, it's going to make its transition from the kingship of Saul to the kingship of David. And that's what we see as we walk into chapter 10. So let's read some of this together. It says, now the Philistines fought against Israel, and the men of Israel fled before the Philistines and fell slain at Mount Gilboa. The Philistines closely pursued Saul and his sons, and the Philistines struck down Jonathan, Abinadab, Malchishua, the sons of Saul. The battle became heavy against Saul, and the archers overtook him, and he was wounded by the archers. Then Saul said to his armor bearer, draw your sword and thrust me through with it. Otherwise, these uncircumcised will come and abuse me. But the armor bearer would not, for he was greatly afraid. Therefore, Saul took his sword and fell on it. When the armor bearer saw that Saul was dead, he likewise fell on his sword and died. Thus Saul died with his three sons, and all those of his house died together. When all the men of Israel who were in the valley saw that they had fled and that Saul and his sons were dead, they forsook the cities and fled, and the Philistines came and lived in them. It came about the next day, when the Philistines came to strip the slain, that they found Saul and his sons fallen on Mount Gilboa. So they stripped him and took his head and his armor and sent messengers around the land to the Philistines to carry the good news to their idols and to the people. They put his armor in the house of their gods and fastened his head in the house of Dathan. And I know a lot of you remember us talking about this as we walked through 1 Samuel, but listen to the close here. This is interesting. It says in verse 11 and following, when all Jabesh-Gilead heard all that the Philistines had done to Saul, all the valiant men arose and took away the body of Saul and the bodies of his sons and brought them to Jabesh, and they buried their bones under the oak of Jabesh and fasted 7 days. So Saul died for his trespass, which he committed against the Lord, because of the word of the Lord, which he did not keep, and also because he asked counsel of a medium, making inquiry of it, and did not inquire of the Lord. Therefore he killed him and turned the kingdom to David, the son of Jesse. And so here we go. Now we're about to transition into the Davidic dynasty, and we're moving out of those genealogies. You'll still get his psalm, but now we're about to get more in depth into the vertical stories of a lot of the kings of Judah. And you see the transition made here that though Saul kills himself, you see God taking responsibility for the death of Saul. It says that he killed him and turned the kingdom over to David, son of Jesse. And that's always interesting when you see that in a text, a man doing something, but yet God doing it. And that's the compatibility of human activity and God reigning on his throne as king, which shows us that nothing happens on earth apart from the rule and reign of God. Even though it may be marred with sin, God is still Lord over all. But as you see how the transition ends in 1 Chronicles 10, 13 through 14, you see that, wait a minute, not only does Saul die, he was buried and he gets an honorable death, because obviously he was dishonored with his head hanging in the temple of their gods, but the valiant men come and rescue him. And we see the loving kindness of God, even to Saul, because even though Saul was under God's judgment, God still wants to give him honor. And this is a very important lesson that Israel needs to learn. Israel needs to learn that when God judges his people, that doesn't mean he utterly rejects us. And now I turn the finger to you. I point the finger at you, Christian. It seems like the hardest part of the Christian life is convincing yourself that God loves you as much as he says he does. That when you're under his judgment, he has not utterly rejected you. Look at this with Saul. Even though Saul was disobedient to God, God still honored him. And that's that chesed, that loving kindness that will pursue a man to his deathbed. And I want to give you a rude awakening. That grace does pursue many men on their deathbed. And you probably got a lot of people in hell because you don't know their final moments on their deathbed, and you haven't been fully persuaded of how gracious your God is. Sit in that beloved and learn to fully understand that the love that God says he has for you is so that he would pursue you to the uttermost, and he desires nothing but his very best for you, and that is compatible with him getting the glory as well. You guys take care and catch you tomorrow.